Okay, welcome everyone. We'll go ahead and get started. My name is Emily Spivey, and I am, along with my husband Tim, are down in the San Diego area in Escondido, California. We planted a church about 6 years ago. And served in ministry there. And then I also work outside of the church sphere in more of a corporate space. I work for SDG&E doing training and development. So I have kind of a unique background, both in church leadership and kind of being out in the business world. And so what I wanted to do today is sort of share with you a little bit just around kind of the concepts around building strong teams and what that looks like in a ministry context. So to give you a little bit more of my background, one of my earliest memories, come on in, one of my earliest memories is being out on the mission field and watching my parents, and I was probably maybe only, I don't know, maybe the age of my youngest daughter, so around 6 or 7 years old, but watching my parents sit down with a team of young adults who were working on the mission field and watching them work through team dynamics and conflict that was happening on the team. And we kind of grew up joking about it, but it was something that from a very early age, I had this really clear awareness that just because it's church work, just because it's ministry, doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of messy dynamics that happen. And so, to me, that was just, it was okay, it was normal. And I feel like God planted in me really early on this passion and love for helping people, imperfect, diverse people come together and work together as teams for the glory of God. So that then progressed into my work alongside my husband Tim in church leadership. We've been in church leadership for about 20 years total now, and in churches large and small. And one thing is pretty consistent, and that is working with people is messy. And I'm going to argue a little bit that working, I think, sometimes in churches, it's more messy than it needs to be. Mm. And I think that's because we have this false assumption that we're all Christians, we all believe the same thing, we all love Jesus, so it really shouldn't be that hard. We should all get along. And so we don't do the intentional work on the front end of focusing on how do we work together in a way that is productive, cohesive, successful. We're not intentional about it. We just jump right into the ministry. We jump right into the work. And we don't do sort of what I think of as like the routine healthcare of just working on ourselves as leaders or as ministry teams. Okay, so hopefully what I'm going to share with you today, and we're going to do a little bit of dialogue. There's a couple of seats right up here. Sorry, you get to come jump onto the front row. hopefully what I'm going to share with you today is applicable to you, no matter what your team looks like. So I'm going to use the word team really broadly. This, you could be an elder on an elder team. You could be on staff at a church. You can be a part of a committee, a women's ministry committee, a small group, that's working together towards something. I think this applies in your marriage and a husband and wife team as you're working together toward common goals. So hopefully that wherever you are, you can apply this to you. Okay, so I'm going to begin with a little warm-up, and I'm going to make you guys actually talk to each other and work a little bit. So what I want you to do is find someone next to you or near you, hopefully maybe someone that you don't work with on a daily basis. Tell them, who is your team, first of all? Okay, what team are you on? Okay, then briefly describe the best and worst teams that you've been on and what behaviors made it the best or worst. Okay, you can choose one or the other. And it doesn't have to be in the context of church. Okay, it can be in any context. It can be a sports team. It can be any context at work. But the best and the worst, and really see if you can identify what behaviors made it a great experience or a really awful experience. And then what one word would you use to describe your current team? If you could pick one word, what would that word be? Okay? So find a partner. Find a buddy.
and do it together.
We're going to take about 5-6 minutes.
Hello. I'm Scott. I'm So, I guess we're going to go first.
Our phrase is Sunday comes every 3 days. It feels like it's, you know, it should be a week, but it really, it jumps on you so fast. Like, you have to do everything on Sunday to plan for Sunday. And then,
So, what behaviors would
you suggest? So, I would say that though, it's kind of in between. I would say my worst, the worst you've ever been on is PTA. PTA is kind of a generic thing. And what makes it that is just that you're dealing with kids. You're getting fierce about their kids. And so, if you're doing something they don't like and it's about their kid, they have more invested than anything else. And then what would describe my current team is that
one word.
Winging it.
Okay, so I'm Angela, and and the worst team I've ever worked on, I will just name the one at work that I had to do a system conversion, and I pretty much got stuck with most of the work. And one word I would use to describe is the current team is disrupted.
Okay, well, I
will just kind of put you on the team. Well, I'm not sure.
And the worst one is the agency. And one word to describe my current team is struggle. That's my team. But we're trying.
Right.
We're trying.
As annoying as each of their personality traits were, it's really effective in their relationship. Like the one that's like obsessed about detail, do the details. And the one that's obsessed about the big picture. And so we were able to tolerate all of our idiosyncrasies and just let each other do what they're good at and not mess with the other person's thing that they were good at. That to me is a great team.
The reason why it was so good is because each one knew what they knew their position, knew what to do, and they didn't bug anybody else. They may have given
one word
that they were passionate about what they did, they were good at it, and they all did the same thing.
Hopefully everyone got a chance to share, at least briefly. So real quickly, what are some of the behaviors that you identified of the best teams? Just shout it out. What were some of the behaviors that made your best teams great?
Trust and respect.
Trust and respect. What else? Good listeners.
Time together.
Time together.
Mm. Encouragement.
Encouragement.
Feeling valuable.
Uh-huh. Good.
We all had a goal we needed to meet, and we all were going to work together to accomplish that goal.
Good. Yeah. Everybody's clear on the goal. They're all going to work together. You said competent.
Right.
Good.
Clear delineation of tasks.
Uh-huh.
And each person had their gift, and they worked it.
Yep. Good. What about the worst teams? What would characterize? Egos.
Power trips and control.
Power trips and control. What else?
Lack of communication.
Lack of communication.
Fear-based
decisions. Uh-huh. Fear-based. Come on in.
Various ranges of urgency.
Okay, good.
And non-team players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people that put in their individual interests.
Yes.
Dumpers.
Yeah. They don't really want to be part of the team.
Yeah. 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 Good.
Clueless.
That sounds like real well.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. So we've all experienced, right? We've all experienced what it's like to be on a great team and what it's like to be on a team that maybe is a little bit dysfunctional. I'll just use that word. And so one of the things I want to just kind of emphasize is that ministry is a team sport. Church is a team sport. And so therefore, knowing how to build a team is essential to leadership in the church. And being part of a team, knowing how to be a team player, is essential for every church member. You think about the ministry of Jesus. Jesus built a team around him. And I think that sometimes, again, we don't think of ourselves as a team. We forget that we're supposed to be a team, and we don't prioritize the task of building teams. We think about the ministry itself and the goals and objectives of the ministry, but maybe we don't spend enough time focusing on building the team or learning how to be a good team member. So teams don't just happen. They are built, and they take a lot of intentionality, especially when new teams are forming. That's obviously the best time to really focus on being intentional about building your team. So I was thinking as I was preparing for this, what's sort of the pitfall? Like, what keeps us? What's one of the things that keeps us from really giving team building the focus and attention in the church world that it needs? Because I know a lot of us are out in the workplace, right? And we do team building stuff at work, right? We know the importance of that kind of thing out in the workplace. So why do we neglect it? Is it just lack of resources? Is it lack of time? What is it? And one of the things that I thought about was this idea of sort of what's your default approach? I think there's kind of two things I think of. One is spiritual, that everything is a spiritual issue, or I would say a doctrinal issue or a theological issue, right? So a lot of times what happens in the church world is we get around a table, whether it's a group of elders or it's a ministry staff or it's a committee of some kind, and we're having disagreement or things aren't clicking, and we tend to put the emphasis around, do we all believe the same thing? Do we all agree? Do we need to study something, okay, and talk about it, rather than the how? So the other end would be the practical. And I think especially in churches of Christ, we probably don't spend nearly enough time on the practical. Just the practical work of how do we do ministry? How do we work together? How do we do church? So what I want to kind of present to you today is that's, number one, it's a false dichotomy. It's not really either or, that the practical work of ministry is in its nature very spiritual, and taking the time and energy to focus on how we work together as a team can be a very deeply spiritually profound practice. And it can have a huge spiritual impact. So your lack of attention to the practical can really impact the spiritual results that you're aiming to achieve. So we're integrated people, right? We're both emotional beings, we're intellectual beings, we're spiritual beings. So the church and when we work together on teams, there are issues. Everything's spiritual in nature, right? But implementing and leveraging practical models, tools, resources, best practices from people that do that sort of thing, you know, there's nothing unspiritual about that. You know, I've heard church leaders say, oh, you know, and that's just all that. They do all that in the business world. We don't need that here. You know, and it's like, why not? Right? We're still people. We still have all the same issues and dysfunctions when we come together and try to work as a team that you get in any other context. So just because we're doing this with the goal in mind of serving the Lord doesn't mean that that we're not still imperfect people, you know, working together. So I just wanted to kind of mention that. I think it's a false dichotomy in that maybe paying a little more attention to the practical how might be a good thing. So what I want to introduce to you, how many of you guys are familiar with Patrick Lencioni's Five Behaviors of a Cohesive Team? A few? Yeah, a few. Good. Okay, so this is a pretty... this is a pretty standard model. It's used a lot. I use it in my workplace quite a bit to work with teams of all kinds, with executive teams, with teams at all different levels of my organization. And again, I think it really applies in the ministry context and the church context as well. So I wanted to introduce it and share it with you as a way of thinking about how do we build a cohesive team. So the beginning and the foundational piece is trust. Somebody back here mentioned trust as being one of the keys to a really cohesive, effective team. And I would argue that without trust, there's not much you can do. If you have a lack of trust on your team, it's going to undermine everything. You might make progress for a while. You might do some good work for a while. But at some point, once a disagreement happens, once there's conflict, or especially if you're trying to implement any kind of a big change. If you don't have a really solid foundation of trust, then things are going to start to crumble pretty quickly. Sorry. The second one is conflict. Healthy conflict. Now...
I think most of us have that.
I know. I was going to say, if you're like me, if you've been in the church longer than about 30 seconds, right? You're like, we've got more than enough conflict than we need, you know. So that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about that kind of conflict. I'm not talking about interpersonal conflict, the drama that comes in dysfunctional situations. I'm talking about conflict over ideas on a healthy team. So when there's high trust, then teams that can get together and really duke it out and debate an idea or a decision in that high trust environment, and it's productive conflict. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. The next one is commitment. If you have that ability to really wrestle through ideas together in a high trust environment, then you're going to have buy-in, right? Once you work through that, everybody's on board, and then you have everybody committed to the same thing. And high commitment leads to an environment where you can have high accountability. Okay? When everybody's actually committed and has buy-in, then they welcome, hey, I'm sold on this idea, so I'm welcoming you guys. Hold me accountable to what I've said. I'll deliver, you know, in terms of my role on this team. Okay? And then finally, what that leads to is results. And I know we kind of pretend in church that we don't care about results, but results matter. We're supposed to be making results. We're supposed to be having results in God's kingdom. And so it's not okay for us to just kind of continue on and never be producing anything for the Lord, okay? But without these things, it's really hard to get to really good sustainable results. So let's begin talk about building trust. As I said, trust is the foundation of teamwork. And I would emphasize that it's what I would call vulnerability-based trust. Okay? So vulnerability-based trust is when people can come together on a team and they can say things like, you know what, I'm in over my head, I'm not sure I know the answer. They can say, you know what, I screwed up on that one, I'm sorry. They can say, you know what, we implemented that decision and we did it really poorly. So let's talk about how to do it better next time. Vulnerability-based trust comes when people feel safe with each other, to not be perfect, to not always be successful. They feel safe enough to fail in front of each other, and to need each other, to need each other's support and help. So we understand this. It's interesting. I was thinking we understand this in the context of marriage, okay? But for whatever reason, sometimes I think it's hard for us to translate it to a larger team in a ministry setting. But godly trust requires covenant relationships. So I want you to kind of like let that sink in just a little bit, right? We understand it in marriage, right, that you have to have covenant in order for a husband and wife to feel safe and fully, completely trust one another, right? And then they can be completely vulnerable because there's this protection, there's this safety that comes in a covenant relationship. So I want to kind of propose that that's true on teams as well in the church world, that there needs to be a sense of covenant with one another that provides that safety so that people can be vulnerable with one another and take risks and you know, risk failing or risk messing up so that they know that, you know what, the first time I mess up, they're not going to kick me out of here, you know? I think about staff and elder relationships, right? And you think about gathering around a table and having, you know, needing to debate an idea or a decision. Well, you can't really risk speaking truth in love in that setting if you're afraid, right? If you're afraid of getting fired or afraid of, you know, any other kind of, you know, passive-aggressive political maneuvering, it doesn't work. And so truth isn't going to be spoken. People aren't going to be able to take risks and speak truth and be vulnerable with one another. There's not real trust. It's kind of like faux trust, right? But it's not real trust. So real trust takes covenant. And that can look like a lot of different things, I think, in a church context. I mean, it can be, you know, built into the contract. It can have to do with governance. It can have to do with your leadership model that you implement. But making it explicit, I think on more of a volunteer-type team, you know, it doesn't have to be a formalized, you know, it doesn't have to be super formal, but it can be an informal covenant relationship that we make explicit, that we talk about what is our commitment to one another for the duration of this project or this, you know, this team, okay? And we're going to make a commitment and honor that commitment and here, and we're going to outline what it is. These are the terms of it so that we know, you know, I can risk, you know, I can be honest and I don't have to be afraid. I think there's a lot of fear-based. Somebody back here said fear-based as one of the negatives on a dysfunctional team. Fear-based relationships are not going to lead to high-performing teams or successful teams. So think about the governance, leadership models, and how that are happening in your context, and how that impacts your ability to foster genuine trust on your teams. Just take a look at it. Examine it. You may never have thought about that before. How does that impact how much trust we can really have in these relationships? So three practical steps to building trust. Number one, take the time to build relationships. This gentleman up here said, you know, we spent time together. You know, I know a lot of elder groups that the only time they're ever together is that, like, three-hour meeting, you know, on, like, Wednesday night from 9 to midnight or whatever, you know, and but they don't spend any time outside of that together building relationship. Same is true for staff teams. Same is true for, you know, a lot of other teaming relationships that we have in church. So make it a priority. Build the interpersonal relationships because it's easier to know somebody and to trust somebody if you spend time with them. It's pretty hard to know somebody if you don't really spend time with them. And if the only time you're ever interacting with them is when you're debating some really heavy church issue, right? That's tough. Like, That's tough. Get together, laugh together, play together, have fun together, be in each other's homes, okay? Take time to build relationships. Use good tools to understand styles and strengths of each person on your team. Again, there is a ton of great resources out there. DISC profile is one. The FIRO-B is another one. A lot of us are familiar with the Myers-Briggs or StrengthFinders. But it's amazing to me that teams will work together for years and years and years and never really have a clear understanding of the different kinds of personalities or working styles on their team. And there is so much just basic miscommunication that happens when we just aren't familiar. We don't know what their style is. So you've got someone who's very action-oriented and driven, you know, and then you've got someone who's very detail-oriented and oriented around harmony and making everybody happy. And that relationship is just like this constantly, right? Because the action-oriented guy thinks that this other guy is just passive-aggressive and never gets on board. And really, this guy's feeling bullied, you know, because he's being, you know, pushed constantly to make decisions faster than he's ready to. He hasn't had time to process and really weigh all the details, okay? So it's just differences of styles that, with a little bit of understanding and communication about that and learning about one another and figuring out how might I need to flex to work with you, that could be a really productive relationship, okay? So use good tools, leverage good tools that are out there. Like I said, make explicit those covenants and examine your practices in terms of governance that undermine authentic trust. So there's no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. For fear has to do with punishment. Whoever fears has not been perfected in love. Fear is not a good foundation for doing ministry together. Just not at all. We want to really take the time and energy to build trust. Okay? So then when you have trust, when there is trust, team members are able to engage in unfiltered constructive debate of ideas. And I don't know, how many of you have ever been on one of those teams where it's like you could just throw the ideas out there and you could wrestle with them and everybody is throwing out their ideas and weighing in?
Yeah.
Who's been on those teams? Okay, what does it feel like to be on that team?
Creative.
It's fun.
It's fun. It's creative.
Energizing.
It's energizing.
Life-seeking.
Yeah. You know, we're so afraid of conflict, right? But what we're afraid of is that interpersonal conflict, when it feels like personal attacks. But really healthy conflict over ideas, when you've got diversity of thought and experience and everybody's bringing their differences and their gifts to the table and really pushing on each other and questioning each other and refining an idea until it's awesome, boy, that's exciting, right? And that's what we want. So when you have trust, then you can get to that kind of atmosphere. So one of the things you can think about as you think about your current team is, what is your current culture of conflict? Okay? So in my mind, there's sort of kind of three basic types. One is what I call the red zone. Okay? This is the red zone. The red zone is low trust, high blame. It feels adversarial. People are defensive. Are reactive. Tends to be pretty risk avoidant. Right? Maybe attitudes of entitlement, cynicism, suspicion. Individuals are seeking to win. And it's just pretty stressful. It's a stressful environment. Okay? Your current team may be in the red zone. The alternative is the green zone. Okay? Green zone is high trust, low blame. We're all in this together, right? We're not pointing fingers. We're not trying to figure out whose fault it is. We're all in this together. Low blame, collaborative, open to influence. Someone earlier, when they were talking about the teams that were great, they talked about listening, right? When you're on a green zone team, you're open. You're not trying to, you know, you're not feeling defensive about your own ideas. You're open because you trust the people around you. And so you're open and you feel trusted. So you're open to considering options, weighing different alternatives, thinking through ideas, okay? You're not clutching so tightly to your own stuff. So you're willing to take risks. And then with that, then comes that energizing atmosphere. Okay, and then there's the pink zone. This is my favorite. The pink zone is what I call the false appearance of green zone, right? So pink zone is like, we're going to talk like we're in the green zone. Mm-hmm. We're going to come to the meeting and, you know, pretend like it's green zone. But underneath the surface, we all know that what we feel is red zone, right? So it's passive aggressive. It's the false appearance of collaboration, avoidance behaviors. So we're not going to hash it. It's a low trust environment. So we're going to say we trust each other, but in the meeting, we're not going to disagree. We're going to pretend. We're going to nod and smile and pretend like everybody's on board, and then we're going to leave the meeting and go have the real conversations. That's the pink zone, okay? And because there's this emphasis on keeping the peace. We don't want to ruffle anybody's feathers. Or maybe there's this one guy, this one woman who, if you disagree with them, they're going to blow up or they're going to get defensive. And so don't bother. Just kind of, nod and smile, and then we'll do something else when we leave. So this is kind of that walking on eggshells, artificial harmony. Okay, so the idea is, what do you need to do, or what might you need to do to get to the green zone on your team, if you're not there already? If you're there already, awesome. But I would say in reality, a lot of, in our churches, a lot of teams are over here in the pink zone. Because we haven't done that work of really building that authentic trust and how we work together as a team. Okay. So once you have the trust, you've figured out how to have that kind of real, collaborative, healthy, productive conflict in that high trust environment, the result of that is everybody is committed. When you're able to offer ideas, offer opinions, debate ideas, people are going to be more likely to commit to decisions. And one thing, point of clarification I want to make here is that it's not necessarily that you're trying to achieve consensus. Okay? It's making sure everybody is clarity and buy-in, which is totally different than consensus. Okay? Clarity and buy-in means everybody's had a chance and been able to kind of, speak their point of view. They've been able to hear. You've been able to debate those ideas. And therefore, there's a level of agreement on what our action going forward needs to be and what role everybody on the team is going to play. Right? Okay? Without that clarity, I don't know if you've been in these meetings, but I've been in these meetings where you, talk, and it's, 3 hours later, and you leave the meeting, and you're like, did we decide it? What? Mm-hmm. Right? Was there any clear outcome? Mm-hmm. No. We're all just tired. Right? This is huge. And I think having the clarity over, what did we agree on? Making it explicit. Is everybody on board? If not, let's make sure. Let's talk about it. Why not? We want to know because we want everybody to be on board and have that buy-in. Those are going to be the keys to commitment. What happens when you move forward and not everybody has clarity or buy-in?
You're stuck.
The ball gets dropped.
Huh? The ball gets dropped. Someone else said it was something over here.
Clicks,
yeah.
Assumptions take over.
Assumptions take over. Good. Yeah. And then you have, things get messy pretty quickly. Or you have what I call false starts, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, we're going to do this. because people weren't clear or they weren't really bought into the idea. So it's sort of half-hearted, half, kind of false starts. Okay. So to me, this is really the key to doing ministry, not just talking ministry. I think we're really good at talking ministry. not always so good at doing ministry. Because it takes, I mean, it takes all of this. It takes a lot of diligence to get to this point, you know. And I think sometimes we think, oh, it's not worth the time, right? To get buy-in from everybody, to get clarity. You know, that's a lot of work. You know, let's just move forward, right? But it's counterproductive. Okay. So when everyone is committed to a clear plan of action, they'll be more willing to hold one another accountable for meeting their commitments. Okay? So one of the things I want to note here, you know, we talk about accountability at all, I mean, a lot, and what I'm referring to here is not necessarily like spiritual accountability. It's holding people accountable to their function, their roles, what they've committed to do, right? On a team. So when you're on a ministry staff team, okay, if you've all got agreement and buy-in, and everybody's on board, and everybody's clear on what their role is supposed to be, then it's not hard, and you've got that high trust, you should be able to go to each other to say, hey, dude, what happened? You know, are you, you know, this is what was expected, you know? What's going on, right? How can I help? But, you know, and we tend to welcome it, right? When we're all really sold out on an idea and we're all bought in to the decision, then we want the others on the team to make sure we want to pull our weight, right? And we want the others on the team to hold us accountable to that. So the result then is you're going to achieve better results. Okay, you're going to have more success. You're going to be more productive. the decisions you make, the changes you implement, are going to be higher quality. Okay? Mostly because the energy, right, of the team is all working together toward those results. Rather than being pulled sideways on all the interpersonal drama and all that, trying to get the clarity that they didn't have before. Okay, all the things that kind of pull our energy sideways. Instead of all of that, you've got a cohesive team that's clear on objectives, focused on the same thing, and delivering those results. Okay, so I want to leave us a couple of minutes for questions. So how do you overcome a dysfunctional team situation? I know for a lot of us in our churches, it's tough. And you may be in a place where there's like a history of dysfunctional team. And that's tough to come in and try to generate positive solutions or change when you've got something really deeply rooted in the culture of how your community does teams. So number one, clarify what a healthy team looks like. And how different that is from where you are now. So seek role models and imitate. There are great, healthy, high-performing church ministry teams all over the place. Okay? Get exposure to them. Study them. Talk to them. Imitate them. Okay? Make sure the people you're working with have a model in their mind of a healthy team. In a lot of our churches, the only thing we've ever seen is dysfunctional teams. And so people don't know any different. I will never forget when we were, I don't know, I was a very young preacher's wife, and I was shocked at some of the dysfunction I was seeing. And a wonderful woman who had been in the Lord and in the church her whole life, and in church leadership her whole life, kind of gave me a bless your heart kind of thing. And she said, honey, this is just the way it is. This is just normal. You know, it's just normal for elders to behave that way. It's just, you know, so just, you know, you just got to get used to it, basically. When did we get to a point where we think this is the way it's just okay, right? And it's not normal, you know, it's really not, you know? So get out there and expose yourself to the healthy paradigms that are out there, the healthy models that are really being successful and accomplishing awesome things for the Lord and His kingdom, and then go and learn and imitate those. Do team building, utilizing a good behavioral profile, beginning with understanding each other's differences. Okay? So take the time to get to know each other, who the people on your team are, and take the time to do the team building. Building covenants that minimize fear, okay, so that you can build that trust. And then create the expectation that you will do relationship as you do the mission and the business of ministry. Okay? Building relationship is not a second priority. It's not down here on the list of things once we do all the important spiritual stuff. Okay? Nurturing those relationships is something you do along the way on an ongoing and regular basis. Okay, so we have like 5 minutes left. Any questions, comments, insights, or thoughts? Yeah.
What do you do if you're on a team where the rest of the people on the team don't feel the need for your team to be different, or uh-huh. don't want to put in the time and energy it would take to make your team different?
Yeah. So I think, yeah, great question. I think there's two questions. One is, is it a lack of awareness, right? Are they really happy with how the team's functioning and satisfied? Is it a lack of wanting to do the work, you know, that they've just learned to kind of an apathy or a feeling, or even sometimes I feel like it's even a discouragement. Like we're not going to spend time on this because maybe we've tried it in the past and it hasn't really changed anything. Or maybe they're the problem, you know? I mean, really. So it might be that you are, you know, it's not the team for you, right? So I think those are kind of three options that you know, questions that you need to ask yourself. Because sometimes I think, again, it's just a lack of awareness or realization of how negatively it's actually impacting what you're trying to do together. You know, you hear people say, oh, it's just, I don't want to, you know, we don't need to mess with all that soft stuff, right? That's just kind of all the fluffy stuff. Let's just get it done, right? And they don't realize what you're trying to get done is being impacted by not taking the time to do this other stuff. I don't know, did that answer your question a little bit? Okay.
Mine's not so much a question as just a recommendation. Mm-hmm. If I went to class on bullies in the church.
Mm.
So yesterday, I think it was. So if you weren't in that class, you yep. might want to listen to that mm-hmm. recording because I think it totally relates to teams.
Yes.
If you don't know who the bully is, it's probably you. And getting rid of the bully doesn't necessarily solve the problem because of, you know, vacuum.
Yeah.
Fill the void. The new bully will arrive.
Yeah.
But so... That was just my comment.
Nice.
All these things you were saying, it really helped me to realize that the team I'm on is actually pretty good.
Good.
Yes.
That's a treat. Good.
Thank you.
Yeah, bullies, that's a whole different class.
Yeah.
But I'm going to listen to it.
It was really good.
Good.
What are places that you would recommend that we go to spark ingenuity in team building and team management or... and team creation? What you have to keep throwing logs on that fire to keep it a bit to being a cohesive team. What are some logs that you would throw our way?
Yeah. I would definitely begin with looking at some good assessments if you haven't done that. And working, you know, there are several good kind of people that do sort of church consulting and that sort of thing, team building. I think often even more seasoned church leaders that are later in their career have so much wisdom and experience and can come in and kind of provide coaching for your team is also a good one. But there's a lot of just, and I would honestly, I mean, I think you can go out and look at things that are used out in the business world. Because again, it's really not that different. I think we'd like to think that it's, we're so much better, you know, within the walls of the church, but frankly, I think a lot of times we're worse, you know. So a lot of the tools and resources that are out there, but if you want, we can chat and I can give you some specific things I can point you in a direction. Yeah. Yes?
How do you begin to build a team when it seems that schedules just don't mesh?
Yeah. So is this, I'm assuming this is a volunteer team?
Yeah.
So I think that to me, it's about prioritization and make sure everybody's clear on what the commitment, the expectations are for that role, for their role on this team. So I think a lot of times people have different assumptions about what is being asked of me, or they just jump onto a team without any real clear commitment. And so I would suggest maybe in that case not being afraid of early on saying, okay, here's what we would like for you to commit to, you know, and coming to some agreement on what's realistic for the people on that team. In terms of, and then holding each other, you know, having everybody agree to that for a certain duration of time, that we're going to commit this amount of time to this team for the next 12 months or whatever, you know, however long it is, and then reassess, you know, at that point. Yeah. Make sure everybody's clear, that's been made explicit. Last question. Okay. Thank you guys so much
for
your time.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.